This is the continuation of session 5.
Okay, so we'll continue with the sutra. We're in the part of the sutra that's talking about the path of seeing. He already said makipa makapa, and then he says timamepa, timadantawa, timamepa kalamepa. This part is cool because the way I memorized it and the way it was taught to me is wrong. And it's very interesting. By looking at the original text and by reading Chöni Lama's commentary, you realize that they left out a negative. So, you know, the way it is recited by thousands of monks in South India, we say timamepa timadantawa. And the original says, and you have the original in the from the canon, and the original according to Dharpa Shiru, it says timamepa timadantawa mepa. Okay? Which is kind of interesting. It makes a lot more sense. Tima means a stink, something stinky, a stain or impurity or something like that. It literally means a bad smell. And this refers to the negative parts of us, your mental afflictions mainly, but all the negative parts of a person. Timamepa means they don't exist. Okay. Timadantawa means they don't exist, so there's actually no reason to repeat it. Timadantawa mepa, which is the way the Kangya reads, and not the way that we recite it. By the way, Sarah J's liturgy text is correct, I'm afraid to say. I checked it. They say if a monkey types on a typewriter all day long, then... No, I remember. Anyway, timamepa timadantawa. Timamepa means there is no impurity. Timadantawa mepa means there is no freedom from impurity. Okay, and that makes more sense. So there is no condition of being, of having your mind filled with anger, jealousy, desire, etc. And there is no condition of being free from that. And this is a very cool thing to realize. Not only are those lilies, are they? I don't know. Not only are the lilies not something which exists from their own side. Like if you, it's not hard to imagine that something that beautiful must have come from some very good deed that I did in the past. You know what I mean? That's not so hard to imagine. And if you, and it's a lot easier to accept if someone says to you, the reason you're seeing it, the way it comes back to you from your old karma is through your own perceptions. That makes a lot more sense. It wasn't like put there by Lily Construction Company. You know, Lily Karmic Construction Company came here the night before and put it there. That doesn't make much sense to me. I never felt comfortable with that. The point is that the karma was implanted in my brain, and that implanted karma is now ripening and making me think I see lilies there, which is the same thing as lilies being there. Okay? You got to get used to that. And that's how karma created those lilies. And that's, I can accept that. That's comfortable, you know. That's no problem. But now what about my own mind, my own thoughts, you see? When I get jealous of somebody, I have a problem with jealousy. I really do, okay? I don't like other Dharma teachers, and I don't like people who translate books well, and, you know, people have lots of nice students, and so I get jealous, okay? And I have that. I honestly have that. And you can check my book. So for me to have to see that in my own mind, which is unpleasant, it's frankly very unpleasant, you know, for me to have to see that in my own mind is, again, a result of my past karma. It's very interesting. You see, timamepa means don't think that even your thoughts and the impurities in your own heart are any different from those flowers, you know. They are also a projection. they also have no existence down there or in there, you know. They also are something that I am projecting. Tima mepa, okay? Tima dantela mepa. When comes a day that I get rid of them, those emotions, and my mind is pure, and you call me an arhat, you know, you call me an enemy destroyer. I have defeated the foe of the mental afflictions. On that day, have mental afflictions that used to exist out there on their own been destroyed out there on their own? No. My mind is now projecting a pure mind. You see what I mean? There is no mind free of mental afflictions. I will in the future be forced to experience my mind that way, in the same way that I'm forced to experience these flowers. And there's no difference. Okay? Your thoughts are also empty. Your mental afflictions are also empty. Thank God. You know, that means they can be destroyed. How? You don't take a bulldozer. Okay? You collect good karma until that good karma forces you to see them go away. And that's really cool. And that's how you can get to be an arhat. That's nirvana, by the way. That is nirvana. So that doesn't exist out there on its own any more than the flowers do. That the day I get to wake up and have a nice, clean, pure mind without any of those jealous thoughts, it'll be because I collected the good deeds to make me see that. And not because it exists out there for some reason on its own, okay? That's what it means. Tima dandewa mepa. Then he says, tiwa mepa kama mepa o. Tiwa is a tricky word. For those of you learning Tibetan, if you spell it dada to dagiku ti, it means to ask a question. If you spell it para to dagiku ti, same sound, it means a very rare word for getting less. Okay, tiwa means to diminish. Okay, and it's often misspelled in, you know, in prayer books and stuff like that, because the para to da doesn't exist very often. Kama mepa o means there's no filling. So tiwa mepa kama mepa o means there's no decreasing and there's no filling. Decreasing here, Choni Dapa Shirib says, refers to the decreasing of your mental afflictions and the eventual destruction of them. It's sepa. Sepa means to decrease or to eliminate something. When your shoes wear out, it's called sepa. When the soles wear out and the holes show up, that's called sepa. Kangwa means your enlightenment, your nirvana, the fulfillment of those things. Kang means full. In Tibetan, when you want to say, give me a cup of tea, you can tell a foreigner because they say, Nala kayu chik deshos, you know, give me a cup of tea. They translate it in their mind. But in Tibetan, it's kanchiteda, which means give me a kung, give me a full, hand me a full. And this is the same word. Kangwa mepo o means there's no fulfillment, there's no reaching Buddhahood, unless it's by the same process of projection. Okay? And that's what it means. You can also read these lines as it referring to the experience of a person in the direct perception of emptiness. You know, to their state of mind, none of these objects can appear self-existently. Okay? If you've been in the classes and you've heard the description, it's very interesting. You have zillions lifetimes seeing everything as self-existent, believing in number two in Kedubje's meditation, believing that all those things come from their own side. And then comes a day, you see emptiness directly. During that 15 to 20 minutes, you get relief for the first time. For 15 or 20 minutes, out of trillions and trillions of years, for the first time and for the only time, you don't have that anymore. You don't see things as number two. Okay? And to that state of mind, nothing else can appear. You can't see anything else except pure emptiness. Now, the 15, 20 minutes is over, and you come down out of that. Your mind reverts to the way it was before. Okay? You start seeing things number two way again. And that's the way it works, you know. But there's a big difference. You don't believe yourself anymore. Okay? like, you know you're still seeing things like that, but you say, I know that's not the way they really are. And I know my mind is a little bit screwy. You know, it's like the king who found out the water was poison and whoever drank it would go crazy. And so he wrote a big X on his forehead because he had to drink water sooner or later. But he said, after I drink the water, I'll look in the mirror and I'll see the X and I'll remember that the water made me crazy. And of course, after he drank it, he couldn't remember when the X was for. You know? Or like, I don't know, Ulysses or who is it? Someone was correcting me the other day. Goes looking for the golden fleece. Is passing the land of the Jason. Sorry. Okay, and he's passing land of the sirens, and he wants to hear what so many people died for, you know. And you guys put earplugs on, and no matter what things I do, you know, like let me go, don't let me go, don't listen to me, no matter what, don't believe whatever I say for the next 24 hours. He orders his men that way, and it's a very similar state of mind. You know your mind is wrong, and you know you can't help it. And you're still seeing things as self-existent, okay? Until you reach like eighth bodhisattva level, which is just before enlightenment, you will continue to see things that way. But at least you don't believe it anymore, and you react less and less ignorantly. When your boss yells at you, you're much more sensitive to the fact that that's creating your... that bad reactions are stupid. So that it helps you, but it still doesn't clear your vision of things. You still see things number two way. Okay? To the state of mind in between, okay? You got a billion zillion years this way. You got seven lifetimes this way. And for that 15 to 20 minutes between there, you're free of those states of mind. You can't have those bad states of mind, and that's one of the meanings of the sutra here. Okay? There is no lessening, there is no decreasing, there is no birth, there is no stopping, there is no purity, there's no lack of, I'm sorry, there's no impurity, there's no freedom from impurity. All meaning in one meaning that to the state of mind perceiving emptiness directly, none of those things are even perceivable because you can only lay your eyes on one thing, and that's pure, total emptiness. Okay? And that's all. That's one of the meanings of this lines, okay? Makepa makapatima mebutima dantawa mepa tu mebukawa mebo. Tetawin sharipu. Sharipu means, hey, sharipu, shariputra. This is still Avalokiteshvara, you know, exhorting in here about that. Yeah, he says Gomlam starts here, okay? When the Buddha says, let me make sure, okay? Yeah. This is where Gomlam starts, okay? This is where he starts the description of the path of habituation. This is spiritual level number four. It comes after you've seen emptiness directly. It might last very typically for seven lifetimes. And it's the whole process of using what you saw to get rid of your mental afflictions. So between seeing emptiness directly and the day you have your last jealous thought, that'll be nice. It's like very typically seven lifetimes. At this point in the path of seeing, you actually perceive those seven lifetimes. Not while you're seeing emptiness directly, but right after that. And you actually see the future, and you see how long it's going to take, and you see the day of your enlightenment and things like that. But you, in between there, there's seven lifetimes of working on it. Based with the equipment of your new understanding of emptiness, okay? And so between here and there, there's typically seven lifetimes if you don't practice Tantra, okay? If you do practice Tantra, you know, finish it in one lifetime, okay? Properly. So between there and there, there's like seven lifetimes. We have reached the point in the book where they're going to talk about that, okay? And then after that, he's going to start talking about how it feels to get enlightened. Okay, that's kind of cool. That's the fifth path. So we've reached path number four. And this is where he says, we're on page 4, line 3, at the very, very last syllable, which for you is page line 4. Shariput detawe na tombo ni na sume tsoa me dushi me duchin na me namba shepa me mime na wame na me cheme lumi ime sime dame time rome recha me cheme do. he's going through what we call the 12 gateways, okay? In Sanskrit, they're called ayatana. Most people chicken out and say ayatana, okay? They're called geche. Geche means, ge means to grow, and che means conflagration, okay? Or wild multiplication of something. Like, if you've ever been up close to a forest fire, like the one that came to my meditation cabin in Arizona, first it catches on one or two trees, and then it starts to jump from tree to tree, and then finally it's just like a wave moving across the tops of the trees. It doesn't even touch the ground, and it's just flying from tree to tree. And that process of going from 1 to 2 to 10 to 100 is called che. Che. So ke che or ayatana means through a single sense door like your eye, you have millions and millions of perceptions are being created through that sense door. So you can call it a gateway of perception or something like that. Okay, there are 12 of them, and he goes through all 12. Sukme, tsorma, dishme, dishme. He goes through the 5 heaps first, and then he says, Migme navame name cheme lumiime. Migme means your eye doesn't exist. Navame means your ear doesn't exist. Name means your nose doesn't exist. And in the Abhidharma it says, if you forget the order, just go down. You hit your eyes first, then you hit your ears, then you hit your nose, then you hit the tongue, and then you get the rest of your body. And that's the order of the of 5 of the 12 ayatanas, the sense gates. And then you, this number 6 is the mind itself. It's your thoughts. You can say your thoughts. And then you get, those are called the 6 objects. And then you have behind them 6 different states of consciousness. Awareness of your eye, awareness of your ear, awareness of what you smell, awareness of what you taste, awareness of what you feel, and then awareness of what you're thinking. All 12 of those are non-existent, says the Buddha. Okay. Again, not meaning non-existent at all. He says here, very cool, where is that? He says, don't forget to add the word rangshinki. Okay. Rangshinki means from its own side, by its own nature. Okay. None of those things has its own nature. Okay. In Tibetan, it's their own nature doesn't exist, but he left out their own nature. The Buddha, come on. Everybody knows that's what I'm talking about. Let's just shorten it to they don't exist. And of course, this has caused a lot of trouble over the last 20 centuries, okay, 29 centuries, you know. And then you get these schools of Buddhism and say, oh, nothing exists, you know. And then you say, let me drill your teeth with a dental drill if it doesn't exist, okay. I said, later, you know. You know. You know, of course the Buddha didn't mean that. Obviously the Buddha didn't mean that. He says, Rangshingi jagores. I mean, you have to add the words by their own selves or through their own nature or by their own essence or from their own side. You have to add those words. Then he says a very beautiful thing. Let's see if I can find it. Tongni la chu shakpa shindu kyurwe nyam shaki singor mepa dang. The fact that none of these things, from your eye to your ear to your nose to your tongue to your body to your thoughts, and to the awareness of your what you see and the awareness of what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, and what you feel and what you think, the fact that none of those things exists, to the state of mind of a person in perceiving emptiness directly, in the way that water, we call chula chushakpa, means water poured into water. While you are in the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot distinguish yourself from that emptiness. Okay? Why? Because you ain't emptiness, baby. And you can't see anything else at that time. It doesn't mean that you are emptiness. We already talked about that. Okay? During the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot discriminate between yourself and the emptiness which you are perceiving, because you can't perceive yourself at that moment, because you are not ultimate reality. And you can't see anything else for that 20 minutes or so. Okay? But the fact that you don't appear to yourself at that moment, okay, the fact that at that moment you can't see them, that all that, that's what the man means in the root text. Nothing exists. Doesn't exist to your state of mind at that moment. The fact that those things don't exist, A, chirang shingi mepa, the fact that in general they don't have any nature of their own. Two, B, dundam chujigi rupe chusud mepa dang, the fact that when you do the kedupje analysis of number four, you'll never find anything. If you go looking for a self-existent flower, you'll spend all day. You better spend all day. That means you didn't find it and you located emptiness. You see what I mean? That fact, dinam gitanya tabi dunsa wa minye bakangla, and when you, here's a subtle one, when you try to find the sense data itself, we didn't talk about that yet. You were hoping that was real. Okay, you were hoping at least that was there. Okay, I didn't lay that on you yet. Okay, your karma is making you interpret that green and white as a nice, beautiful lily, but your karma is also making you see the green and the white too. Okay, we didn't talk about that, and you can keep going down level by level, and you'll never find anything that you're not projecting. That fact, he says. I like this. He says. Come on, it boils down to all the same thing. You know, these are all the same thing. It's very cool. The fact that the data's not there either, the fact that the flower's not there either, the fact that when you're perceiving emptiness directly, the object and the subject seem to be mixed like water into water, the fact that nothing has any nature of its own, it's all the same thing, really. Okay, it's not technically the same thing, but it all boils down to the same thing, he says. In Tibetan, it's Nechik Tu Do'o. Gakja Lang, very important. Gakja Lang Rang Shing Gye She Ngu Su Cha Simbala Gong Shing. The reason the Buddha doesn't repeat they have no self-existence, and the reason why he gets a little lazy and says they don't exist, is that he knows we'll be smart enough to say through their own nature, or from their own side, or by themselves, or without my active karmic participation, you know. He knows we would be smart enough to do that. Unfortunately, for centuries, people have not been smart enough, and then you get these schools of Buddhism that say nothing exists. Ergo, you can engage in any weird behavior you want. You know, it's the towel thing, Joanna Macy's book, you know. She's at a Buddhist conference, and they're checking out, and the lady next to her drops her bag too hard and it pops open and all the hotel's towels fall out. And they say, wait, no, did you steal the hotel's towels at a Buddhist conference, you know? And the lady says, it's all empty, it doesn't matter, you know? And that's like classic wrong view, you know? That's very, very classic. We're getting to what is to me one of the sexiest parts. I kind of like to leave it for the evening. The evening is the best time to talk about emptiness, okay? And I think we'll leave it, okay? Give you 15 minutes to luksaso, okay? Luksaso means to prepare an empty space for dinner. Okay.
This is the end of session 5. Session 6.
Okay, we'll meditate. Just watch your breath. Take refuge in the contents of this book in the Heart Sutra, what you've heard so far. and think about someone or a group of people who are suffering, and I think clearly about what they're suffering from, and wish that you could achieve happiness so you can help them. Be specific, don't be vague. Then we'll start through the four parts of the meditation of Kedupje. And first, again, swing your eyes from left to right in your mind across the room. Pick out about three or four things that you see. Pick out among those the one that you like the best and the one that you like the least. Pick out something that you can see in this room that you like a lot, and pick out something that you don't like so much. And look at those two things the way you used to look at them. The one you like is nice from their own side. And the one you don't like is not nice from their own side. And look at them that way. Practice looking at them the way that ignorance looks at them. Now, third way, practice looking at the one you like and thinking that the nice things there The reason it looks nice to you is something in your mind. And then flip over to the thing you don't like so much and think about how the reason that it doesn't look nice to you is that your own mind is making you see it that way. And it's not coming from their side. So number three is wisdom. Number two is ignorance. Number three understands the dependent origination of those things. Number three understands how they come from karma. Now for number four, do the reverse, not of number two, but number three. So now number four, which is an exercise of trying to see emptiness itself. Number one is not thinking about the way things are at all. It's called Matagma Chepa, just watching things. Number two is called ignorance's way of looking at things, that they come from their own side. Number three is understanding dependent origination and focusing on how things are a result of your own karma. And then number four is it can go off of number two or number three. We'll take it off of number three this time. Focus on those two things, the one that you like and the one you don't like. We'll start the one that you do like. And try to decide whether there's anything so nice about them or that object that everyone would like it. Does everyone like that thing? Does everybody in this room like it as much as you like it? Try to find something about that object that everyone would like, no matter who they are, that would never make a problem for somebody. Then go back, it's very subtle. Try to focus again on the thing that you like. Focus on it like number three, that it's coming from your karma and coming from your mind. And the reason you like it is that your mind is making you see it as something nice. Now it's very subtle, and this is the first time we try it. We'll do it a few more times, but pull the rug out from number three. It means focus on the thing you like, the thing you like to look at. Very suddenly, pull out the thing that you are projecting and see what's left. And you'll lose it after a few seconds, and then go back and do it again. Focus on the thing you like, number three way. As something that is just a bunch of colors and shapes, but you're projecting onto it something nice. For you, it's something nice. That's coming from you. And then suddenly pull out the thing that you're making it and see what's left. One more time, focus on the thing you like as number three. Try to see that the thing you like is something you're creating, that your mind is creating. And then suddenly pull away, very suddenly pull away your participation of your mind and see if there's anything left. Go back to number one. Just look at the thing you like and look at the thing you don't like. Don't worry about where they came from. Now number two. Practice it again. The thing you like is good from its own side. The thing you don't like is bad from its own side. Now number three, the thing I like must be nice because of my own mind, forcing me to see it that way. The thing I don't like must be not nice because of my own mind, forcing me to see it that way. Why? Other people don't see it that way, and they're not crazy. Number four, very suddenly pull away your way of looking at it and see if there's anything left. Okay, take a break. Right? Relax. By the way, don't fall into this trap of, oh yeah, I get it. I like this thing because my mind likes it, and not because it's nice from its own side. And then don't fall into the trap of thinking that's wrong or something like that. That's exactly the way it is. The thing is not nice from its own side. You're making it nice. Does that mean you shouldn't like the thing? Not at all. You should like the thing because your mind is making you think it's nice. But you should just get your mind to think everything is nice. Okay? Really. It's not, it doesn't cheapen its value to understand that you're doing it. It makes it more valuable because then you can maintain it. Okay? It doesn't make the nice things in the world less real to know that you're making them up. Let's just make them all up, okay? It also doesn't make them unfunctional or unreal, you know? A piece of pie looks nice because you of your past karma, and it doesn't make it unreal when you bite into it, you know? It still tastes good, and paradise is that, you know? Paradise is that. You got to get used to that too. I mean, at some point it'll seem like things are only good because you're making them good, and that's fine, because that's all you were ever doing anyway. Seriously. Okay? And that doesn't make them artificial or anything like that. It makes them more real. And that's the middle way. Okay? We'll go do some sutra. The Buddha just got through saying through Avalokiteshvara that nothing exists, right? Huh? No, you can't talk. Okay. he did get through saying that, but it means nothing exists by its own nature. Nothing has its own nature. Okay. When you did your meditation on the thing you like, and you strip away the part that's coming from you, there wasn't anything left. Okay. There should be some kind of feeling of boom, you know. And nothing there. It doesn't mean visually nothing there. It doesn't mean a black hole or something like that. It doesn't mean, you know, the person disappeared and there's this black space there where they used to be. It doesn't mean that. It means that very suddenly there's just nothing there, okay, at all. Now he gets into my favorite part. We're at page 4. We're on the last line. It says marikpa me, marikpa sepa mepa ne gashi me. Okay, marikpa me, marikpa sepa mepa ne gashi me. This is a reference to the 12 links of dependent origination. You can see it here. Okay, the Buddha said that every temple should have one of these at its door, and people from Boston are specialists, right? They had this, I think, a couple years ago. I don't remember, but. There are 12, it's a 12-step progression of how things happen, why the world happens the way it's happening. Those of you who've heard Maitreya's version, it's very similar, okay? I mean, to summarize Maitreya's version, which is shorter, okay? I know 12 is a lot. So Maitreya, the way Maitreya said it, you come into this life with the habit of thinking number two. Okay? You come into this life with that already planted in your mind. Okay? You already have the seeds in your mind to think that the things around you exist from their own side. And you can't help it. You know, so first thing, it's original sin, okay? Whatever you want to say. It's not your fault, okay? You came into here with that problem in your mind. You and every other living creature, including amoebas, ants, roaches, elephants, whales, have the feeling that the world is happening out there and that it's not coming from their mind. They believe that. They really believe that. And all beings have what we call innate ignorance, okay? Everybody has number two. Every being in the universe has number two, if you're not enlightened or an Arya, okay? And those are, relatively speaking, in this realm, people who are on an Arya track are extremely rare, okay? You tell me, what is 7 divided by infinity? And then I'll tell you how many Aryas there are on this planet right now, okay? I mean, that's the odds. You see? They have 7 lives to go, at the most. You and they have lived infinite lives in the past. The odds of meeting an Arya before they enter a different realm is something like 7 divided by infinity, okay? Not counting emanations, okay? I mean, Buddhas can emanate here anytime they want. That's a different thing. The odds of that are, who knows? Maybe half the people in this room, maybe nobody, maybe everybody, except me. Okay? And but everyone who's not like that comes into this life with the tendency to think that the things around them exist outside of them. Everybody, every being in this realm, unless in Arya. Okay? And the odds of meeting an Arya are very bad. Okay, just statistically speaking. That seed in their mind takes root and gets stronger during this life. Sooner or later, bad things start to happen to them. And it's all the huge, long list of things you didn't want to happen in your life. You know, it's people you didn't want to meet. It's disappointments you didn't want to have. It's credit card problems that you didn't intend. It's problems with your family that you never wanted. It's watching your own body start to deteriorate. And then watching your mind start to slow down, which, you know, maybe we don't have great bodies. It's a comfort to have a nice mind. That will also disappear. That will also start to melt down. Inevitably. And then sooner or later those things start to happen to you. And you get angry. You know, you get into a traffic jam or you meet someone you don't like. And you take them to exist from their own side. You don't realize that it's a collection of data that your mind is making you see as a bad person. Okay, it's just your mind making you see that. You think they're bad from their side. You forget that everyone's mother loves them. And every time I see a serial killer on TV, they interview the mother. And she's, my? Johnny? Never. He's a wonderful boy. You know? And, you know, you can't find a person almost that somebody doesn't love. You know, it proves they're not self-existently evil or appear evil or appear good to somebody. It depends on who's looking. If mom's looking, they're always like, the world doesn't understand my boy, you know? And it proves that they're not one way or the other from their own side, okay? But you don't choose to think about that. You get, you get fixated on that this person is bad from their side, and everyone should agree with me. You know, this person is unpleasant from their side. And I'm, of course, I was the first one to realize. But you know, but now everyone else should come to that realization. And I'll do the best I can to convince them, you know, either directly or by slow persuasion, that this person is really bad. And if direct slander doesn't work, I'll try hinting and stuff like that, you know. And sooner or later, everyone should come to believe how I believe. And should come to see them as I see them. And based on that, you say something or you do something. And it's all based, the key is right there. The wheel starts at 1 o'clock with 2 blind men with sticks, you know. It starts with not realizing that you have created this person and that your present perception of them is being sustained by your bad karma. You know, like if it's like a fountain, you see, and you created the bad karma at the bottom of the fountain, and now this thing is happening at the top of the fountain, and there's a ball being held up by the water. You know, if you could stop being angry or jealous or upset at them, the ball would fall down. I mean, the ball's up there right now and you don't like them. And because you don't like them, you say more things to them, or you say more things about them. And that makes more water at the bottom of the fountain, and then that keeps the bad thing happening. And you don't get it. And then the wheel circles around. That's why samsara is called a wheel. This is called sipe korlo, means the wheel of life, the wheel of suffering. There's a reason for calling it korlo. There's a reason for drawing it as a korlo. The process is dhamma maripa. You don't understand that the world is number three and not number two. Okay? Nipa duce kile. Then you say something or you do something. Okay? Sumba namshe. It causes you to be born with a mind. Shipa. What is that? What is number four? Shipa Mingsuk? Two guys in a boat? Mingsuk, your body, basically your body that you're parked into when you get into this life. Okay. Ngapa, what is ngapa? Keche du, it's your sense powers. Okay. Drupa Rekpa, because you have sense powers, you can make contact with outside objects, the person you don't like. Okay, Rekpa means contact. Dumba Tsorwa, based on that contact, you start to like them or dislike them. It's a guy with an arrow in his eye. Gepa Sepa, you start to reach out for that. Sepa means desire, but it also means that the karma that you created at number two, at the bottom of the fountain, by number eight has become very powerful and it starts to create its result. Okay. What's at number nine? Gubalemba. The monkey grabbing the fruit. Okay. Gubalemba means it's where the karma has become extremely powerful and it's just about to cause a result. Chupa Sipa, Gepa Sepa Gupa Lemba, these are also mental afflictions where you're starting to grasp to things strongly because you don't understand them. You get very attached to being angry at the person. You get very attached to wanting the person. Those two extremes. Because you don't understand that what makes things happen and the reason they exist is something coming from your own mind. You think it exists from their side. And so you do things towards them. Gepa Sepa Gupa Lemba, you start to have mental afflictions toward them strongly. Chupa Sipa is that those emotions make, that's where the karma is very ripe, okay? The karma that you collected before, because of your emotions, becomes extremely powerful until Chukchipa Kyawa, it's enough to cause you to see yourself take birth, okay? We talked about how your karma makes you see the flowers. And we talked about how your karma makes you see the sun come up. And then we talked about how your karma makes you hear the thoughts in your mind, good or bad. But, and we talked about how karma creates the border between the United States and Mexico. Okay. Karma also creates the whole impression of being alive. And karma also makes you think you're being born. Okay? It makes you think you're coming into this world. It makes you think you're being in this world. Okay? And again, it's just a projection. Okay? The things you see around you, the thoughts you hear in your mind, the feelings you have, they're all a projection. Okay? All of it's a projection. And the impression that you are a human is also a projection. Okay? When you look down and see hands and feet, it's a projection. when you commune with other human beings, it's a projection. They don't exist independent of that. They don't have any other existence of their own. That means it's really easy to go to a different realm. You can call it reborn as a bug, okay? Americans like to think like that. You know, oh, you stupid Buddhists, you know, you say you're going to be reborn as a bug or something. I'll squash you, you know, when you get there. You know, they make fun of Buddhists for saying things like that. Being reborn as a bug doesn't mean that there's a factory somewhere that turns out bug bodies, and they're waiting there for the next available mind that's in the bardo, and then when that mind comes out of the bardo, there's a bug waiting at the bug factory, and then you move into that body. But that's how you think, isn't it? You know what I mean? If I ask you, you're kind of thinking like that. There's a bug mommy and a bug daddy, and they have a bug baby, and then the bug baby doesn't have a mind, and you happen to be available, and you move into that bug baby's body. No, you think that. You really think that. And that's how everybody thinks about rebirth. You think like that. You really do think like that. It don't work like that. Within the space of a few minutes, the karma in your own mind stream shifts and you start seeing yourself as a bug. How's that? Okay? That's called a quick death, bardo, and rebirth as a bug. And we are all eligible. You know? Now, as of, you know, 8:30 or whatever time it is, within 5 minutes, anybody in this room, because the bug baby factory doesn't exist, and the way you get reborn as an animal is a minor shift in your perceptions. And your mind has the ability to do that within 5 minutes. And you will see yourself as an animal. And you will be an animal because all it takes to be an animal is to see yourself as an animal, and there were never any other animals. Okay? You're not safe in this realm. There's nothing concrete about this realm because it's all a very fragile house of cards depending on your perceptions. And it could collapse at any moment. You can't trust this realm. You can't even trust the thing that you're a human right now. It takes about 5 minutes for the perceptions to change. It's not that you have to wait in line until the bug factory puts out a bug baby. It's not like that. The reason you think you're a human now is because you perceive yourself that way because your past karma is forcing you to think that way. And that could wear out at any moment. And that's called, oh man, he was my best friend and suddenly had this stroke, you know. And we tried to help him, and right there, right in the middle of the Heart Sutra, you know, and weird, you know, and you hear that, you hear stuff like that, and it can happen, you know. That's number 11, Kewa. So I don't like it when they present the 12 links as some kind of foreign thing or theory or something like that. We're all eligible for number 11 within 5 minutes of any given moment, you know. Two breaths. I mean, hold it for 10 minutes and you're there, you know. Number 12, gashi. Gashi means old age and death, all right? They have a guy carrying a body to a Tibetan cemetery, which means you throw the body out on some rocks, you know. Why did they put gashi together? Why didn't they split off gawa as another link and then we'd have 13 links? You see what I mean? Why did they mix old age and death together? They said, listen, we didn't want to make old age link number 12 and death link number 13 because some people don't make it to number 12. Some people don't get old. They die in the womb. They die at birth. You know, they die as a child. The Buddha said, I'm not going to make old age a separate link because it's not sure that you're going to see it. You know, let's put gashi together. Okay, and so the last one is old age and death. What I just went through is called lungjung. It means go from 1 o'clock up to 11 o'clock
and describe the process in a cause and effect relationship. Okay.
Now there's the thing called Lung Dok. If you shut off number one, then number two will stop. If you shut off number two, if you stop thinking that things exist out there, you won't react negatively to people anymore or to situations that you don't like, because you'll see that it's only the reason to make it happen more. If you shut off number one, you shut off number two. If you shut off number two, you shut off number three. And so the Buddha in this Heart Sutra says, Marikpa me ching, Marikpa sepa mepane gashi me. Marikpa is link number one. Gashi is link number 12. He says, there is no link number one, and there's no link number 12. And it's not true if you shut off link number one, you shut off link number 12. Okay? What's he mean? Self-existently. Okay, from its own side. Okay, it is true. If you can stop thinking of things the wrong way, you don't have to die or get old. But even that doesn't exist outside of your own projections. Even that chart is your own projection. And you would never have heard what I said in the last 10 minutes if your past good karma wasn't forcing you to hear me. You see? That chart is not self-existent either. The Buddha designed it, by the way, himself. Right? That's not self-existent. And it's not the fact that if you stop being ignorant, you don't have to die anymore. Even that is a projection. Okay? So he's being very powerful. Getting out of samsara, getting out of your suffering, and the fact that Buddhism works itself is a projection. Okay? And that's why it works. And if it wasn't a projection, it couldn't work. Okay? Okay, Marikpa sepa me gashi me gashi sepa paru yang me do. Don't tell me. I get this from a lot of people. I really do. They object. They say, don't be so heavy. Make your classes more light. You know, be more scholarly. You know, teach us some nice meditation stuff to calm down and stuff like that, you know. Be like those, you know, could we just do some happy meditation and relax, you know, and watch our breath and, you know, be joyful. You know, I don't know, do some yoga and be calm and could we just do that, you know. This over and over, this theory stuff is, you know, and you don't, and it's, I don't know how to say, it's hard to find sponsors, frankly, who will pay for me to sit here and talk about you can get out of your death, you know, and you can, and that's the reason to have a Buddhist center, and that's a reason to teach Buddhism, and that's a reason for us to be here, you know, is, and I say, you know, and I say Buddha said so, okay, you know, Heart Sutra, there it is, okay? Gashi me, Marikpa me, Marikpa sepa mepa ne, Gashi me, Gashi sepa paru yang me do, you know. It's exactly what Buddhism is all about. It's exactly the purpose of Buddhist studies. It's exactly the only purpose of meditation, is to stop your death and stop getting old. And I'm at an age where I would love it to happen. And it's quite feasible, and you can do it. You just do it, you know. But you have to understand emptiness, and you have to keep your book. And I'm shocked that it's all the 40 and 45 year olds in our group that don't want to keep their book. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't get it. You know, we're the ones who need it the most. You know, the other people maybe have some time. You know, it takes a while for the process to take effect. You have to stop the karma at the bottom of the fountain, and then, you know, sooner or later the ball falls down. But you got to get started at a decent age, and that's keeping your book. You have to watch your vows. I had somebody tell me, "I don't want to keep my book." You know,
I have all these reasons people tell me. It's weird. You know, I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't get it. They say it's boring, or it sounds like Catholic Sunday school that they had to do something like that, or I don't get it. I don't know. It's not the way I heard it was done, you know. I'm just going to recite something once in a while and that'll be okay, or something like that, you know. I don't get it, you know. All over Buddhism, all over scripture, it says you have to check your vows every hour or 2 hours, you know, you have to. Anyone in this room who's ever taken any kind of initiation is bound by solemn oath to check your vows every few hours, you know, and it's a great idea, and the Buddha said you have to do it, and I don't know. And it works. I mean, you know, it works. And it's not meant to be a punishment or some kind of a imposition. It's an imposition to have eternal ecstasy, you know, and I don't get it, you know, I really don't get it. Anyway, it's a free country. Okay. All right. Then he says, Dungyawa dan kunjawa dan gopa dan lame, yeshime topa me matopa yame do. Dungyawa means there's no suffering. Okay. Kunjung me, there's no cause for suffering. Gopa me, there's no end of suffering. Lame, there's no path to get to that end. Okay. So he goes right into the Four Noble Truths. Those of you who've had any kind of classes with me, you know, noble is a bad translation of Arya. Arya means person who's seen emptiness directly. And in the few hours following your first direct perception of emptiness, you see a bunch of incredible things, including your own future enlightenment. You see what the problem was all along, which was your ignorance. You see clearly how many lifetimes it's going to take you and what you're going to be doing to get out, and you're very aware of your death, and you can read other people's minds directly, and you feel the suffering there. You hear it. You're aware of it directly. These all occur during the hours following the direct perception of emptiness, and it's a point of no turning back. It's a very powerful point. All of those events also, says the Buddha, don't come from their own side. Okay, they are also projections. So even something so profound as seeing your own enlightenment in the future, something so profound as seeing why your whole world is painful, something so profound as seeing how many lifetimes it's going to take you and where you're going to be and how life is going to be, And then the ability to directly read other people's minds and see the suffering there. All of those things are only projections. Okay. They also don't exist from their own side. Okay. That's, he's going through the whole essence of Buddhism and saying that's a projection too. Okay. Which, by the way, it has to be if his theory is correct. You know, even his own teaching and him have to be a projection. Okay, you get to hear the Heart Sutra not because the Buddha spoke it, but because you have the good karma to make him speak it. Okay. Yeshime topa me matopa yamedo. Yeshi means wisdom and the fact that you understand all of these things that we're talking about. Topa me means, by the way, these two phrases, if you've memorized the Heart Sutra, you're working on the Heart Sutra, Tasi Hai, she asked me to wave in the camera. Topa and Matopa Me, okay. This is one part that I never got, you know, and Choni Dapa Shidup has a very nice commentary. Let me see if he's got it here. Topa Jawe Chu Yang Me. Top Gyur Dan Top Ja Mayimbe Matopa Yang Me To. Singor der langdor la denshin tope tsu tembo. Topa jawe chu yang me means, topa me means, topa means to achieve something. Matopa means to fail to achieve something. And the Buddha says, achieving things doesn't exist, and not achieving things doesn't exist. So what's he talking about? Chanadapa Shedip says, Topa Jawai to a young met. There is nothing you can ever attain spiritually which is not a projection. Okay? Forced on you by your goodness. Okay. Topgirdon Tocha Mayimbi Ma Topa Yang Medo. And not getting the things that are either not worth getting, or the fact that you haven't got the things which you could have gotten, but you couldn't do it yet. Okay, he distinguishes, when he says you didn't attain, it has two meanings. The non-attainment of the things that no one would ever want to attain is one way to read Matopa. The fact that you haven't attained the things that you want to attain yet, which is also a non-attaining, both of those, either way you read it, that's due to your karma, and those are also not something that are existing from their own side. Okay? The fact that you attain whatever you've attained spiritually, and the fact that you haven't attained what you shouldn't have attained, or you haven't attained what you could have attained, those also, topa me, matopa yang me do, they don't exist from their own side. Okay? Then he goes into another section, and he calls Shariputra again. I'd like to take a small break, like 5 or 10 minutes, and then come back and we'll go through that section. We're about to reach the mantra. Very sexy, okay? So come back quick. I've always wondered what a tantric mantra was doing in the middle of a nice little innocent heart sutra. Okay? And Chanadapa Shedip goes into a very long explanation, a beautiful explanation of the mantra and the meaning and why is it there. Because I always thought mantras were secret, you know. You can find out if you come back quick. Okay? 5, 10 minutes, come back, okay?
Session 6 continues on the next CD.